right, for those of you watching on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page, welcome back for our final Stoppage Time Live of 2018. And what a year 2018 has been for soccer in Atlanta. The MLS Cup champion, Atlanta United. We are celebrating tonight here at Fideau and Buckhead, so come on down and join us. We'll be here until 8 o'clock tonight. And for those of you who are already here, this is our best crowd of the season. I think because Julian's here. But, uh-oh, we can't have that. Hold on, technical difficulties. Okay. Wow, that much of a delay. So I could curse or something, and it would, man, I could dump it. Anyhow, come on down and join us. We're here until 8 o'clock tonight. Hopefully that didn't look or sound too awkward. Lot of questions that we're going to take from you watching on Facebook tonight. From the crowd here as well, because we only have one guest, and it's Julian Gressel, who we'll get to in a second. So send us your questions now. We're going to be taking a lot of questions tonight. Before we get to Julian, it still kind of feels surreal. I mean, we had a parade for Atlanta United yesterday, and we had tens of thousands of people out in the rain celebrating this amazing accomplishment by this club.
It started as a parade. It ended as a march, and then it ended as almost a concert. And mic drop moments everywhere. Darren Eales throwing more shade at everybody he could find. I love it. That's what it turned into. That's how Atlanta does these things.
It felt very Atlanta.
Yes.
In terms of, okay, well, we haven't done this in 23 years, so screw it. We're not going to have barricades. Everyone can just walk
in the
parade.
We'll make it up as we go, and it'll come out
right.
Great. That's what we
did. It did come out great. I mean, that was the great thing. It was a really positive vibe. I think APD deserves a lot of credit. Like, it wasn't a really strict crowd control situation or anything like that.
I think I heard the police doing sha-la-la. I'm pretty sure
I think
heard
you're right.
That.
Well, no, you knew it was going to be a fun day when, at the start, some of the cops were grabbing flags and asking if they could borrow them for a second. We knew it would be that kind of day. Okay, Julian Gressel joins us here at Fideau and Buckhead. And first of all,
thank you, guys.
Two things. First of all, you'll never have to buy yourself a drink ever again in this town. So might as well start tonight. We got you water. Second of all, thank you so much for taking time out. This is a huge week for you in terms of celebrating, being with your teammates, being with your family, your fiance. We really appreciate you coming here tonight. I mean that sincerely. It's great to see you.
No, thank you, and it's good to be here. I mean, the last few days have been hard, but a lot of fun, you know, and to kind of come here and share this moment a bit with the fans is obviously always special to me. I feel like everybody knows that by now.
tell me, where were you last night?
I have an alibi. I was actually right here. We were upstairs. I think a lot of bartenders and the owner was here with us at a Delta company party, which was kind of weird. But turned out to be a lot of fun with a lot of the guys. And then I went home from here, and I have no idea what happened after that.
I believe you. You've got an honest face.
thank you.
Great work on Saturday. Great work the entire postseason. Great work the entire year. I think your versatility has been just incredibly important for this club. You've played so many different roles this year. You've flourished at all of them. You flourished again Saturday night. How does it feel to be an MLS Cup champion?
It feels, very, 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 very good. You know, there's so much work that has been put into this whole project of Atlanta United, of personally, of myself, you know, of just this year, of, you know, adversity that we had to face, the loss against Toronto. You know, we started off really bad against Houston, all these types of things, and to come out, you know, with the MLS Cup and to win it in front of our fans and do it the way we did it in the playoffs, you know, very dominant and just the best team that played, you know, and that, it's just really special. And it still is hard to realize because it takes a while, you know, until you can actually capture it. But it feels really, really good to obviously share this moment, like I said yesterday with the parade and all of that. You know, it was really special, and it's something that, you know, I'm sure everybody on our team will never forget.
It really feels like this run started with the final whistle in Toronto. What was that week after the Toronto match like?
It was tough, you know, but at the same time, it was needed, I feel like, you know, because some of the guys said it yesterday when we were here, you know, after a few beers, you kind of start talking a bit more, you know, truthful about everything. But we were saying that if we maybe win the game in Toronto, I don't know if we'd be here as MLS Cup champions, you know, and I think that really sparked something in us all and really questioned, yeah, us as a team, us personally as a character, you know, what type of player, what type of team you are, what type of organization you are. So it's just something that was positive. Yeah, a negative result that turned into something really positive, I think.
Looking back on it, what do you think happened up there? Was it just, man, nothing went right in the match? Was it something going into that match that may not have clicked? I know there was a pretty intense travel period with the West Coast trip and then going into the international break. I mean, now that time has passed and you are the Cup champion, can you pinpoint maybe what went wrong up there in Toronto? Because it's something we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah, and I, or us, I'm sure we don't have all the answers either. You know, I think that there's just a sum of things, you know, that just came together in that day where, yeah, maybe not everything went our way, you know, you can definitely say that, but we also didn't earn it. You know, we didn't show up with the right mentality. I think that was the number one point where we came in and we really thought that, all right, you know, this is our trophy. Like, we already basically have it. We just have to go out there, play against Toronto, who had a really bad year, you know, obviously very successfully before, but this year they can't get anything together, and we're just going to go out there and, yeah, tie or win the game and then hopefully then, you know, get the trophy. But we actually, you know, forgot to actually put the work in, and I think that's really what stuck out to us, and that's ultimately what we changed, you know, going into the playoffs.
One of the most impressive things in the playoff run was the defense and the defensive work. I mean, three clean sheets. You were a huge part of that, and you transformed yourself in the season from being one of the leading creators of chances to one of the main people cutting chances out for the opposition. How hard was that transition going from wing back to a left-sided central midfielder?
Yeah, it was quite a jump, to be honest with you. But, I mean Tata and you know, I've played in so many different positions. And in that moment, I feel like we were going to change something before I even found out that we were going to. So I for myself, I had thought about, you know, different roles that I might play in different systems that we might be able to play in the playoffs. So it started with that, but then, you know, once I kind of found out of what my role would be and everything, it's just, you know, a mindset thing. And that week was so, yeah, different in general, where you really questioned like everything. And that's why it was easy also to kind of reset and be like, all right, let's just get into your new role. Yeah, do the dirty work in the midfield, you know, and don't be as flashy with all the assists and all those kind of things, and just do the work and you know, and get your rewards that way, and we definitely did that.
The one thing that stood out to me about Saturday was that Valeri, Blanco, Chara, all world-class players, and you guys pretty much shut them down. Was that kind of the focal point of your tactical plan coming into the match, that, hey, look, if we can shut these guys down, hopefully Bobasi doesn't do too much to us, that's the match right there? And do you feel like you executed it?
Yeah, I mean, we won the game, you know. I don't actually remember too much of the game, you know. It was a special moment to be on the field and to kind of, yeah, I have to rewatch it, to be honest with you. But, like going into the game, you know, we knew that obviously Valeri, Blanco, you know, those guys can create a lot of things on their own, you know, even when it's one-on-one battles with them, you know, they usually come out on top. So we knew we had to take care of them by committee and be very disciplined and obviously stop them on the counter and all these types of things. And I just remember going into the New York City series and being like, all right, midfield, it's very crucial to win second balls, to win 50-50s and all those type of things. So we had it there against the Red Bulls. You know, that's all they do. Tyler Adams, Sean Davis, you know, those guys, that's all they do in the midfield. I think we outplayed them. We outplayed New York City FC. We outplayed the Red Bulls, and I think we outplayed Portland, you know. Definitely. And so I think that was a big emphasis, especially for me and Darlington. You know, we said that to ourselves before the first New York City game, and then every game after that, where we were like, get yourself into the game by winning second balls, by winning 50-50 battles, and then you earn the right to play. That's all we've kind of talked about right before the games, and you know, and that was just the mindset that we had going into all these games, and that didn't change for the final.
was there a point Saturday night in the match where you started to realize, like, hey, we're going to lift this trophy? What, was it not till the final whistle? Was it after the second goal? Was there a point in the match where you're like, okay, we got this?
I think there was like a minute left in the game and Brad had caught a corner and he went down or something where I ran out of the box and I did my fist bump for the first time and I was like, all right, this is it. It was actually funny because I said it to some of the guys yesterday that when we scored that second goal, I thought about 28-3 on the field. Yeah. Like I really thought about that on the field, and I was like, no, we cannot give this away. This city has been through so much. We cannot give this away now.
You're not alone, by the way. Your owner, a lot of people don't know this, the league chaperone came into his suite in the 75th minute and said, you need to come downstairs now for the trophy. And he said, no, come back in 10 minutes. And they came back in 10 minutes, and they literally had to kind of drag him out of his suite down to the pitch. Because he had been through that in Houston. But you guys are different. And I haven't been able to put my finger on it. I know we've had a lot of collective sports heartbreak in Atlanta, but there's just something that feels different about you guys. And I think what I love about this club the most, a lot of different backgrounds culturally, a lot of different backgrounds in terms of nationality, a lot of different styles. And it all just kind of works. And I think that's a testament not only to you as players, but also your manager, Tata Martino. How does it feel to be able to send him out of Atlanta with a win?
It feels great. You know, I think he's obviously set us up for the success, you know, and ever since we came in, I remember the first meeting, he said, listen, we're not an expansion team. We're not a normal expansion team where we're like, all right, let's just see what happens. No, we're going to go and win. You know, I want to win. And I want to win championships. So and obviously we knew that coming into this year, we had a lot of players. We obviously had worked with Tata before, and we knew that the type of players that we had, and we had good relationships already. Got some really good players added on, you know. So it was kind of a good setup this year. You know, obviously last year was a very good season, but it was still difficult because we were so new, and everything that it still plays a role, but. Like I said, Tata had really installed that mindset of winning and not seeing ourselves as this, of not really giving ourselves an excuse of being this expansion team. And that really is what, you know, there's so much credit that goes out to him for not just me personally, but, you know, for how he set up this club for the future is absolutely crazy and insane to think about, to be honest.
When you think about it personally, though, and you look back, what is something you keep coming back to that Tata Martino specifically helped you with?
There's so many things. It's it's hard. I don't really know how to answer that question, but I can tell you guys a little story about, you know, what type of manager Tata is in terms of coming in here and really trying to get everybody on the same page. Where I was obviously drafted, you know, 2 years ago we were at IMG Academy, and in the first week I had gotten a little bit hurt, so I had to sit out for like two or three very important days of training that I had to watch, where it was a lot of tactical things, a lot of tactical movements. And then as soon as I got kind of healthy again, I started working on my own a bit to get back into it. And then he actually had set up just a personal session, kind of 20, 25 minutes, just him and me, you know, so I can get caught up with all the tactical movements of what they did, of how they did it, you know, what he wanted me in what he wanted me to do then as a number eight. He saw me as a number eight back then. So, you know, that's just the type of coach he is. He came in here, you know, not really only focused on 11, 12, 13, 14 guys. He really gave everybody a chance, you know, and I feel like I wouldn't have gotten that anywhere else in MLS, to be honest with you, because you know, there's still this predetermined kind of reputation that comes with being drafted, you know, and not as much obviously in NFL and every other sport it changes, but in MLS it was still like that. But that's just the type of coach, you know, Tata is, that really kind of respects everybody and wants to give everybody a fair chance to really compete and be the best that they can be.
So that's a nice rundown of things that Tata has helped you with, what you've learned from him over the last 2 years. Is there a particular teammate that maybe you've learned a little bit from this year or in the past 2 years?
There's a lot of you know, that I've learned from teammates. I mean, obviously, you know, first and foremost, I think Michael Parker has been incredible to me, you know, as a as a close friend, you know, and as a player, you know, a guy that has been through so much in his career, and it is, has obviously gone to Germany, gone to Europe, you know, is this kind of also won Rookie of the Year, you know, kind of all these things, and I've joked about it that, you know, this last week was really not his week, you know, so in the past, but we changed that this week, so that was good. But no, I mean, there's guys, you know, that you talk to, just like little things, and I'm big on little things, you know, because I think they add up. And so I obviously talked to Jeff a lot, you know, Larenowitz, Kevin, you know, is a really good friend of mine by now. He obviously, we talk a lot about Germany, you know, how it's been for him there, and what type of, you know, differences there are, and all these kind of things. It's really interesting. But yeah, and then you have a guy added last year late, you know, like Brad Guzan, who's has done so much in his career as well, that, you know, I can draw so much from, even though he's a goalie, you know. So it's just there's too many to just say one.
Thoughts about heading into the CONCACAF Champions League for the first time?
It's going to be exciting. You know, I don't really know much about the team that we're playing, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. You know, it's another trophy that, you know, another record that we can set in terms of, you know, no MLS team has ever won it. And it's another trophy to win, you know, and I think it's doable, you know. And I think Toronto showed that last year. So we'll definitely be excited once that time comes.
A couple non-soccer questions for you. I think you, more than most of your teammates, you've done a really good job of connecting with everyone here. I think your presence here tonight is a reflection of that. But you don't have to spend too long in Midtown to see you out there walking your dog. And you've been so generous with your time this year. You're always very friendly to people who come up to you. You strike me as someone that I could see you making Atlanta a permanent home. You know, whenever your playing career is over, maybe I'm totally wrong. But it feels to me like this city really loves you, and I kind of feel like that love is mutual. Can you talk about how much the last 2 years, just being in Atlanta, has meant to you?
I mean, it has meant so much, you know, and it has meant, yeah, it's really hard to describe for me, because I feel like I'm from here now, you know, and I said that after the final whistle. There was a TV interview I did, and the guy was like, obviously you're not from here. I was like, well, I'm from here now. No, but that's really how it feels. It feels like home, you know, and I think that's anybody, yeah, that's what anybody ever could ask for from a city and from a fan base that we have. And I know that you guys hopefully feel that, you know, I'm pretty connected to all of you, and I just know how it feels to be a supporter, you know, to be one of those people standing in the stands, really chanting for your team and all of that. So, I mean, I love to give back, and I love to just let you guys know how much we appreciate it, you know, and make you smile and whatever. If it's not through my on-field play, at least I can do it, you know, with other stuff. But I hope I have contributed to that with my on-field play
areas
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done just fine in both. Don't worry about that.
What was one of the things that surprised you the most about Atlanta when you got here? And as you've gotten to know it?
I didn't really know what to expect in general to start, you know, because I've never really, I know, I think I stopped once in the airport and had a layover. That was really it, you know. So I had no expectations. I had no idea what I'm getting myself into. But, you know, it's been nothing but positive. You know, I absolutely love the city. I love the people. I love living here. And like you said, I could definitely see myself making this a permanent home.
Well, 1 month from Friday, training camp opens. So between now and then,
really?
I know, yeah. So between now and then, now this is important. You've got a birthday to celebrate this weekend, and then you have a little matter at the end of the month you have to attend to in Florida, some getting married thing, and then you got to get right back into training camp the second week of January. Are you going to be able to take any time for yourself and just disconnect, decompress for even if it is just a couple days?
Yeah, I think, you know, actually the time with the wedding might help, you know, where I'm heading down to Florida early. My family's coming over for Christmas. You know, we're spending the Christmas in the Keys, you know, which is always nice. And, yeah. And you know, that'll be a really good time to kind of just sit down, you know, relax. And then we're also going on a honeymoon right before preseason, so that'll be also be a good time.
You Can
know,
you disclose just, where you're going?
Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun, you know.
It won't be the last time you're in Mexico this year, hopefully. Hopefully we're back there for CONCACAF Champions League. Julian, I don't know what to say. I mean, you've given all of us a lot of happiness over the last 2 years, and unbelievable highs over the last 72 hours. I just hope you've enjoyed it as much as us. You put in the work. You do it. It's easy for us. We get to watch and enjoy. So I know you know how much it means to us. I just hope you've been able to enjoy it as much as we have.
Of course, and because you guys are the way you are to us, you know, that's what makes it easy for me. You know, I'm a guy that draws from that and takes a lot of pride in that, and you know, being the type of person I am, not really changing, you know, but it's really been a pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun and easy to get motivated because of what the fans and what you guys do for us.
MLS champion Julian Gressel. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Tell the cup we said hi to when you see it again.
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'll see it tomorrow at the training ground. We'll see.
Yeah, right. Great job, Julian. Thank you very much. And for those of you watching on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page, we hope you enjoyed that too. Go ahead and continue to type in your questions at the bottom of your screen. Julian's going to dive out now. Jimmy Vance will come in, and we'll start to get to some of your questions. This is, it's almost surreal, and that's the word I keep coming back to, because I think we knew this club could do it. I think we really got a sense during the Red Bull series that this club was mm-hmm. going to do it. But the fact that we're here now celebrating it in this big, huge manner, it's the culmination of a lot of hard work for a lot of people, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, it's very cool to see. I'm kind of like Julian. When you think back to aspects of the game, I was hoping we weren't going to have some like big game breakdown of it, because I don't remember a lot from it. You know, details from it, I don't. I went back and I watched some of it when I got home from Mercedes-Benz Stadium at about 2:00 in the morning, Sunday morning, and I couldn't finish it. I finally did fall asleep. I watched the rest of it last night, and yeah, it felt like an out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy to look back at it and realize, like, we were there and we were calling it, mm-hmm. and all of you were there and screaming your heads off and making more noise than I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, that was – and it's not just me saying this. Mike Bell, for what it's worth, and he's going to try to come down here because he's a big Julian fan as well. He told me, and if Mike Bell says it, I believe it. I don't usually believe everything he says.
I was about to say.
He said, that's the loudest Atlanta sporting event he's ever been to.
I can't think of many others that would be in the conversation.
No. I mean, Jimmy, what do you think? I mean,
oh, it was. I mean, being down there for the celebration with the trophy, I've never heard it that loud, especially when Arthur Blank lifted that trophy.
Right.
I mean, the place erupted. It was nothing like any other sporting event I've ever been to.
Yeah, I think what helped, too, is that it was kind of a low-stress final 10 minutes. Like, I felt like we knew it was going to happen, even if we couldn't say it out loud. I think deep down we knew it. And that kind of got us in the frame of mind where, okay, we know we're going to be able to have this explosion here as soon as the full-time whistle goes. But what really stands out to me, guys, about this postseason run, and again, keep typing in your questions on the bottom of your screen. We'll get to them here in a moment. This playoff run looked a lot easier than it probably was, but boy, they made it look easy. Mm-hmm. And that's what stands out to me the most. Because think of the hard road they had to take. They had to go to Yankee Stadium. No one wins at Yankee Stadium other than NYC, right? You go up, you win there. You could have won 2-0. You won 1-0. You come back here, you destroy them. 3-1, easily on to Red Bulls. Red Bulls are the best team in the history of the MLS regular season. And you annihilate them in the first leg. All you have to do is play defense, basically, for 90 minutes up there, and you're good. And again, against Portland, a good team with some world-class players that took out some really good Western Conference sides. You never really felt like Portland was going to win that match.
That's the thing about this team that hasn't been talked about enough is to be able to go from the end of the regular season and predominantly over the 2 years play a 4-2-3-1 open attack-minded team, and then to reshape it there going into the postseason and focus on, as Julian said, winning that second ball and taking – you know, Julian moving him into a central midfielder role, and not the central midfielder role that we expected when we saw that. Mm-hmm. Not a number 10, more of a line of three with Darlington and Julian flanking Eric Rometty. That is not an easy transition. It's not easy to go from one way to another in a week where you're going on the road to Yankee Stadium and get the result that you did and then be able to ride that on out. That tactical versatility is something that we have never seen to this degree in Major League Soccer.
No, no. And it's a testament to Tata Martino, mm-hmm. who has – I'm not sure if he's still in town today. I think the rally was kind of his last official duty here in Atlanta. The search begins for a new manager. We're going to get into all the club news from today in a moment. Yeah, but I want to give this moment some justice.
But what was the talk before the playoffs? Everybody said Atlanta United cannot beat the big teams, the best teams. Like, mm-hmm. we didn't beat, you know, NYCFC this year. Like, Red Bulls, you know, never beat them. So in Portland, we've never beaten. So erase that completely off the
That's
map.
That's true. You also haven't lost to Portland ever.
Right.
Yeah. You did not lose to New York City this year. Mm-hmm. You had match control in both matches against New York City. Mm-hmm. The first Portland match was a little weird, and then you had a Nagby injury on top of it. I really feel like, and you're right, because we did hear that, but I didn't think it was fair.
Right.
Because if you looked at the two regular season matches against Red Bulls, all the weird things that happened there, really lousy use of VAR in the match in May mm-hmm. at MBS. The referee points to the spot three different times, including twice in the first half up there.
Right.
Really choppy, erratic match. SKC, Guzan gets red carded. Who else would be in that group? You beat LAFC. You killed them. Sounders came in, played a really cynical, negative game mm-hmm. that was not fun to watch. And I just feel like a lot of the results that Atlanta United got against the quote-unquote top teams this year were explainable.
Yeah, and same last year. I mean, that was a running narrative for quite a while. And, you know, to be fair, we talked about it going into the postseason. What was the signature win for this club? And we didn't really have a clear-cut answer. And we talked with a lot of different people about it. I remember going to Yankee Stadium and wondering, what is that signature win that this club has ever had?
Yeah.
I think five different people had four different answers. I mean,
We talked about that the night before. Yeah. That dive bar in Rye, New York.
Yeah, there was not... Yeah. An idea of what it is.
Right.
I mean, now we have one, obviously.
Yeah, I think we have five
yeah,
now.
But
I mean,
we easily yeah. have the one from Saturday. Yeah. But then you can look at that win in the first leg of the Red Bull series, and you can look at the win in the first leg of the NYC series, and those all will stand up with anybody.
Starting with Jimmy, I want to ask you both. We've talked about how last year Toronto was the greatest team in the history of MLS. 69 points in the regular season, one shield, won the cup. Is Atlanta United now in this discussion? Is this 2018 Atlanta United, are they 1-1A? Is Atlanta United number one? Do you still have to pay homage to Red Bulls because of what they did in this regular season? Like, I guess this will take some time to flesh out, but where do you think this Atlanta United 2018 side would rank among all the best teams in MLS history?
I think they're top two. You have to give Toronto credit for winning the treble, winning the Supporters Shield, and winning the Canadian Championship last year. But, I mean...
With Canadian Championship's yeah, really yeah. hard to win, man.
But,
I'll tell you.
But with Atlanta United getting the 69 right. points, like, you know, equaling that and winning MLS Cup in the dominant fashion, they have to be considered as almost 1A, 1B, in my opinion.
What do you think?
I think we'll have a better answer once we get through the CONCACAF run. And yeah, it is slightly different teams. And Toronto saw some changes going from 17 to 18 in their run. Atlanta will see bigger changes, far bigger changes than Toronto. But if Atlanta goes into CONCACAF and wins it, then yes, this Atlanta team is the best that's been put together in Major League Soccer. You have to give Toronto credit for winning the Supporters' Shield and then winning MLS Cup because it doesn't happen very often.
All right, club news from today. The good news is, Julian, thank you again. Julian Gressel.
Thanks, Julian.
Happy birthday. Thank you very much.
WrestleMania, baby.
All right. Club news from today. The obvious one's the Greg Garza trade. Mm-hmm. I know. I would like to thank the Cincinnati manager for letting us all know about that, by the way. How about that? And if you did not hear Darren Eales...
Now, you were in the studio when this happened,
Darren
right?
Eales was outraged at the way this was handled today. Long story short, MLSsoccer.com. The expansion draft takes about 30 seconds to complete.
It's a conference call.
It's a conference call because there are no other teams in the draft. It's one right. team. All Cincinnati has to do is look at the list and say, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, turn it in. Draft over. Mm-hmm. And they have Wiebe and Kalen Carr and Warshaw doing this ridiculous hype video for Cincinnati. And then they bring on someone else to, like, do interviews with the owner and the GM. He's complimenting the GM on wearing a blue blazer with an orange pocket square. It could have been done in 60 seconds. So they go through the picks, and then their coach says, oh, by the way, we're really excited that we traded for Greg Garza today. What? The Ooh. Club, Atlanta United, did not get a chance to announce the trade themselves, mm-hmm. which is the etiquette. They had his contract, and Darren Eales was furious that Atlanta United did not have an opportunity to acknowledge Greg Garza. And I won't repeat exactly what he said on Dukes and Bell. You can find it on the 92.9 The Game website. Mm-hmm. Let's just say this. If Orlando City is our rival, Cincinnati is going to get trucked when we see them next year. Because Darren Eales...
Wow.
And I was excited to have a friendly rivalry with these guys.
Well, Nashville will still be okay.
Yeah, but yeah, right. I mean, it's going to be 8-0 up there at Nippert at this rate because Darren Eales is really angry.
So we're not going to be able to go have Skyline Chili after the game.
Well, you wouldn't want to have that anyway. That is the most overrated food stuff in the world.
Man.
No, it is. Okay, but now, seriously, Garza's gone.
Yeah.
Atlanta United got $450,000 total allocation. Yeah. I think it's $250 GAM, $200 TAM. That feels like a really good return, knowing that you have George Bello. You have a couple other options at left back for 2019.
Yeah, look, the rumors had started bubbling up about possible trades, and Garza was a name that came up a lot. Mikey Ambrose was a name that came up a lot in terms of the expansion draft, and he was one that I thought Cincinnati would be targeting because Cincinnati's been really bold today, first off. Their expansion draft, they got a couple of guys that I think will play significant minutes for them. They went out and they got Kendall Waston from Vancouver in a really big deal, about double what they gave up for Garza. Mm-hmm. So this is a team that the MO, the idea coming in had been, oh, well, they're going to be very modest and they're not going to spend a lot of money because they're not going to hire a bunch of DPs. Well, they've spent some money. They had a lot to work with in terms of allocation money, and they're putting together a good squad. In terms of Garza, you came into this offseason with Greg Garza, Mikey Ambrose, Jose Hernandez, and George Bello, all primary left backs. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any scenario that you came back into 2019 with all four of them on the roster. It's just not feasible. You also have Chris McCann, who can play left back as needed. It just looked like it was set up for somebody to go, whether that was going to be Ambrose in the draft, and you would have gotten $50,000 in general allocation money if that had happened.
And a protection from the next expansion draft as well.
No, because this was a paired-up deal with LAFC.
Oh, okay.
Because next expansion draft will be Miami and Nashville coming in together.
Together, true.
So because it was staggered, this one was paired up. Yes.
Okay. All right.
So you would have gotten $50,000, or you get $450,000 in allocation money. And with the aggressive moves that Atlanta makes, allocation money is really important, especially that targeted allocation money, because that can help get you under the cap, get a player who would be a designated player down under the cap. It gives you so much flexibility. And, you know, let's be real. George Bello is a very special talent, and we talked about it a lot after he started playing. You are going to have to find a way for him to get significant minutes in 2019. And we thought that might be an early season MLS matches while CONCACAF was going on. But you have to play the kid. He is at that level. He can't go back and forth like he did this year.
All that's true. I'm still going to miss Garza.
Absolutely.
I'm going to miss his leadership. I'm going to miss just having a nice guy in the clubhouse. A lot of people don't realize about Greg Garza. He speaks like 8 different languages. He speaks Portuguese. I'm not joking. He speaks Portuguese. He speaks Spanish. English, I think a little bit of German. I really thought Garza could have potentially been a future captain for this club if there was a way to keep him around because of how well-liked he is. He's someone who came here. I think Jared Smith tweeted it exactly right. He came in here. He made the absolute best of the Atlanta situation he could. He was a rock for this team. He was an all-star. He played through injury. I'm really going to miss him.
Yeah, I don't think there was a surprise that that when he came back on the team in the playoffs that we played our best this year.
And played all but 8 minutes in the postseason.
I mean, with him back, of course, with Almiron coming back from injury, but I think with Garza on the left back, it opened up our style of play more with him. And due credit, I mean, he'll be forever a legend with the club, being a starter, winning us MLS Cup. Good luck to him, and hope he comes back, you know, maybe later down the road.
Darren also said on Dukes and Bell, they want to have the manager hired by January 14th, which is the start of training camp. That obviously makes a lot of sense. He said today, paraphrasing, they are just now starting to talk to candidates. That's what Darren is saying. A lot of reports now all of a sudden about Sampioli. Scalotto, obviously, I saw a report he will not be back next year. I don't know if that's true.
He's made that clear that he's not coming back after this break in Argentina. They take a summer break.
How many, like, okay, now we are in the free agency period. We're getting into silly season now as far as player movement is concerned in MLS. How much can the club really do without knowing who the manager is?
You can do a lot. Think back to what Darren said. You know, this is not going to be a manager who's going to come in and dictate how this club operates. It's going to be a manager who slots in and works within the system that has already been created. I think there's a little bit of just a false narrative out there about how managers function in the game. Not many managers in this league or any league have say over player personnel matters. They don't go out and negotiate transfers. They don't decide who's coming and going. Peter Vermes has that in Kansas City, and that's honestly about it in this league. Mm-hmm. Around the world, generally, the manager makes the best use of the players that he is given. That's going to be the case here. So you have a roster. We know what it's capable of now, obviously, and whoever comes in is going to have to make the most of it. Now, they might change the shape. They might change the style a little bit to suit the way they want to play, but it has to work with the talent they have.
Darren also said it's going to require a number starting with 3 for Almiron right now, and he pointed out they still have him under contract for a few more years. Almiron said, I think Saturday, plans on being with Atlanta United in the preseason. We'll see where it goes. But
which he's contractually obligated to be there.
As of right now.
Yeah,
yes, you're right. That is true. It's going to be a lot. This is our last stoppage time live of the year, calendar year, but there's going to be a lot happening between now and really 1 month from now when training camp opens up. It's going to be very exciting. Yeah, I think almost as exciting as it was before the 2017 season, because there's going to be a lot of transformation with this club, and it's a little bit scary to think about because we're the defending champions now. But I'm also encouraged that I feel like they're going to try to upgrade as best they can.
Yeah, I mean, amazing where we've come. I mean, from beginning of 2017, you know, Mercedes-Benz wasn't built, training ground wasn't built,
right?
You know, and now look at us now, MLS Cup champs, and we have the best facilities, you know, almost in the world, and we've got a great roster with, you know, Joseph Martinez coming back,
right?
And you know, and the rumors of Pitti coming, you know, from Argentina. I mean, it's going to be a loaded roster again.
And I don't want to say zero chance, but I feel like next to zero chance Joseph goes anywhere.
Yeah, I would say it's a very slim chance. When you go into this transfer window and you haven't really heard of anybody chasing yet, makes you feel pretty good that he's going to be back.
Right.
That doesn't preclude somebody selling a player, sitting on a pile of money, needing a forward and saying, hey, he'd be really good in our system. So That's the life of a big club, and this is something that I think everybody in Atlanta will be getting used to, because we had a little bit of it after 17 with Nagby coming in, Barco watch, all of that. We're going to have a lot of watches over the next month.
Yeah.
Get the hashtags ready.
Jay, do we have Pitti watch yet, or are we working on that? Give me a break. Yeah, no videos yet. Come on, Jay, get on it. Jeez. It's
yeah.
Like, it's like you're... It's like you've been celebrating the whole time. I mean, come on, Jay.
One thing on Pity Martinez. He has talked about Atlanta United. The president at River Plate has talked about Pity Martinez going to Atlanta United. All that's fine and dandy. All that happened, too, before Barco Watch really got going. And
that's
then
true.
Everything changed in the middle of it, and it took a lot longer to get it done. There's no telling what's going to happen. And right now, there would be a lot of roster maneuvering to try to find a way to make that happen.
As of this moment. Absolutely.
You know, if Miguel goes, then it's a different conversation.
Right. Good points. It's not like it can all happen at once. There is a process to all this. I feel like in our last 20 minutes, I mean, this is a victory party. We're too quiet here tonight. we're celebrating a championship. I really feel like what we should do, the final 20 minutes, I know we have a lot of people watching on Facebook. We have a ton of people. I can't believe how many people we have here tonight. Let's just take questions and celebrate with each other, huh? And go ahead and keep typing them in on the bottom of your screen, and when we run out of Facebook questions, we'll turn it over to you guys.
Yeah, everybody on Facebook, keep on sending them in because for some reason I cannot get to the top here. But we got a question here asking, Katrina, can you explain the waiver draft?
Oh, man. I don't have a flow chart and a rule book and the giant whiteboard that we had. I don't have all that with me tonight. basically, there's three different ways players are eligible to move around in the offseason. Free agents who have been in the league for 8 years and are over 28 years old. Then players who are at a next threshold, and I believe it's 5 years and 25 years old or roughly something like that. They go into the reentry draft. The waiver draft is for everybody else whose options were not picked up or are out of contract. So you're going to see some movement. And I always think back to what DC United did after 2013 going into 2014, where they were one of the all-time worst teams in the league's history in 2013, but picked up Dwayne De Rosario, who won an MVP, picked up Bobby Boswell, who we know very well, and I think picked up another starter in waiver and reentry drafts going into 14, and they were a Supporter Shield contender. It can happen where teams can remake themselves really quickly in this period if they do it right.
We also had one of the great moments in MLS history a couple of years ago when Montreal Impact drafted that Rio Coker guy in the waiver draft.
Nigel Rio Coker.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you haven't seen the I'm in Love with Rio Coker music video,
you are in
for a treat.
Go Montreal's social media and digital team put this thing together when they picked up Rio Coker, English veteran, you know, player with some with a resume for sure.
Right.
They picked him up in the waiver draft.
Yeah.
And do this video welcoming him. That's amazing. Go on YouTube, look it up. It's one of my favorite things ever produced in this league.
Let's see. Mark Brooks asks, can you name some possible head coaches?
Well, Scalotto and Sampioli.
The three that were mentioned in the last report out of Argentina, and we don't know how valid these are. Jorge Sampaoli, who was with Argentina at the last World Cup, probably best known for his work with Chile.
Mm-hmm.
He is also a manager from the Marcelo Bielsa tree. So that's a good thing when you look at somebody following Tata Martino, because they both have the same touchstone of where they learned how to be a manager. Sampaoli did an amazing work with Chile after Bielsa did. Scalotto just lost the Copa Libertadores second leg of the final, the super final that ended up having to go across an ocean because of chaos and everything that happened there. He has said he's leaving Boca Juniors. We know about the toxic nature of Argentine football before that happened. I think it was very easy to say, I'm done with this and I want out after everything that happened in Copa Libertadores. He says he's not going back to Boca. He's won titles with Boca and with Lanús. You know, he's a very successful manager. He's also lifted an MLS Cup with the Columbus Crew. So he knows the league, and that's a big thing in his favor. And then Gabriel Milito was a little bit of a wild card because we had not heard his name mentioned at all. You're talking about a player with a pedigree playing at Barcelona for a number of years. A younger manager, hasn't had as much experience, would be probably a little more relatable to the player side of it because he's not that far removed from being a player himself. He's been well regarded, you know, in Argentina with his work. He just doesn't have a ton of experience. He was the one, the big point with him in Atlanta is he was the one who promoted Ezequiel Barco from the sixth or seventh team at Independiente to the first team. He saw that special talent straight away.
Let's see. Danielle asks, how many more seasons do you think Jeff and Parkhurst have?
Well, first of all, Darren Eales confirmed today on Dukes and Bell that they are absolutely trying to bring Parkhurst back, which I think is very reassuring.
Sure.
I am imagining the move to decline his option may have been a little bit gymnastics to just protect him from the expansion draft and nothing more than that.
Yeah, the one thing with that, before you go on, the Parkhurst deal and leaving him unprotected, because of his age and his contract, if he had been drafted by Cincinnati, he could have opted for free agency. So there was no risk, and people were talking about it, you know, the last couple of days, like, oh, I'd pick Michael Parkhurst in this for sure because he's a veteran in this. He could have said, no, Cincinnati, I'm going to be a free agent. So they're not going
to
waste
a
pick.
And then come back to Atlanta, in theory.
Right, so, that could have happened.
And I get the feeling talking with him, and we spoke with him on the full-time report. If you haven't heard it, it's kind of fun. I get the sense he wants to be back. Jeff Lorenowitz, I also get the sense he wants to be back for one more year, but I'm a little less sure about him. He is still under contract, but was left exposed for the expansion draft. And I honestly was – I know a lot of people were thinking, uh-oh, Romario Williams, maybe Mikey Ambrose. I actually was a little bit queasy about Jeff Lorenowitz in the expansion draft.
I wasn't not because of the same situation as Parkhurst. I knew Parkhurst wasn't going anywhere. Because of that question, you know, is he going to come back? Is he going to be able to keep doing what he's doing? Cincinnati had 5 picks. You can't waste any.
No.
You have to either pick somebody that you're going to keep and play or somebody that you can flip. And Cincinnati did a little bit of both. They're not going to waste a pick on a Jeff Lorenowitz who might say, you know what? I don't feel like going to another expansion team. I'm good. I'm going to call it a day.
So I think, to answer the question, I think Parkhurst for sure is back, and Lorenowitz, I'm pretty sure.
I think, well, right now we know the other way around. We know Lorenowitz is under contract.
Yes.
Parkhurst is not. I think both are back. I think they're both part of this team next year. They might not play as many minutes, though. You might see them transition a little bit more, rotate their minutes a bit more.
Lorenowitz, I don't think the idea was ever to have him start 38 matches this year. I don't think that was really the idea. It worked out, and he was phenomenal.
He's insane with how fit he is at his age and what he can do. I mean, that's another underrated move going into the postseason that Tata Martino has not gotten enough credit with. Moving Jeff Lorenowitz to center back, because I know it scared everybody to death when they saw that. Parkhurst, Lorenowitz, LGP, 3 center backs set up at Yankee Stadium. But Jeff in the back was a huge part of this back line that had 3 clean sheets.
Let's see. A couple people were asking this with Greg Morris as well. If Miggy goes, where might he end up going?
The money's in England. I think tactically and his style of play, I'd love to see him in Italy. I think he would thrive in Serie A. There's not a lot of teams in Serie A with the type of money that Darren's talking about. And that's where Atlanta United is in the powerful situation here that I don't think another Major League Soccer team's ever been in, because generally if these types of numbers are being talked about, you take the best one you can get quickly and you say bye and you hand over a gold watch and you move on. You don't have to sell anybody here. There is no obligation to sell. He's under 3 more years of contract. You could keep him another year and he might be worth more next year. You don't know. They don't have to sell.
I think the one rumor that I've heard that I really don't see happening is a loan.
No, I
just don't understand why. I guess
I get that one. That was a very specific to the club. Newcastle, if they were to make the move to bring in Almiron, might have to structure it as a loan with not an option to buy, but a loan with an obligation to buy. A little more like Atlanta did with Joseph Martinez, where you knew you were going to do it. And they accelerated it.
Yeah.
I think it would be because of Newcastle's situation where they're in the process of being sold.
But only them.
Yeah,
really,
because
only them.
They might not be able to do the purchase now. They might be able to do it in the summer. So it might be just moving dollars around, moving checks around. Nobody else, it's going to be a loan with an option to buy.
See, Brandon's got a question here. He goes, so crazy as it sounds, are we now a club that has expectations for managers? Maybe not the Yankees level of no rings if you're gone, perhaps, if you can't get a cup within 3 years, but do we go another direction?
This is a club with expectations, period. You know, let's look at the LA Galaxy. Right now they're mentioned with Caleb Porter. The LA Galaxy used to be a club that that would be kind of not big enough, not sexy enough. I don't think Atlanta could look at a manager like that, not with the bar that's been set with Tata Martino and winning a championship in the second year. I think you have to look big.
I think that's a great point. To answer the specific question, though, as to whether or not it would be a 3 years to win it or you're out, I think the situations are different. I mean, obviously you're in this to win championships, but shoot, I mean, if you're 70 points, 3 years, three shields, and now in this new goofy playoff format, you draw a short straw in a knockout round and you know, weird things happen. I hate getting into absolutes that, okay, yeah, you've got 3 years, you got to do it or you're out.
This league's not set up that way. Yeah. Because it's not the NFL where, okay, you don't get me a Super Bowl bye.
Right.
This is a league where you can win a supporter shield, go into a knockout situation, get knocked out if the playoff format changes. You're not going to fire anybody for that. You can go into CONCACAF and win CONCACAF and then maybe win MLS Cup and finish third in the conference. You're not going to fire anybody for not winning enough trophies. There are ways to be successful without lifting MLS Cup. I think the bar, though, would be set for success.
Yes.
Now that could be defined different ways.
Right.
You're not going to hire somebody and give him 3 years to figure it out. This club's not built that way.
Yeah. I see. Shiva asks, did MLS Cup at Mercedes-Benz beat the Super Bowl attendance from 2018? I think it beat the last four, right?
It did. I don't know if it'll beat this one in the same building.
It won't.
Yeah, I think the way it's set up won't.
It won't. And that's only because there's literally more seats
for
the Super Bowl than MLS. I did say this, and Shiva, thank you for your question. Someone else asked me on Twitter. I really think we're going to look back at December 8th, 2018, as the night where the MLS Cup final got there on the same level as, say, a Stanley Cup final. Maybe it might be a little ambitious to think NBA final, but I think it's getting in that direction.
It's a World Series right now.
Absolutely. This was a huge point of maturation for the MLS Cup final. There has never been an MLS Cup final like this ever. The TV ratings prove that. The attendance proves it, obviously. But it had, and I've heard a lot of people who've been to a lot of MLS Cup finals, including yourself, this is the first time it really felt like a major sporting event on the American calendar. And you guys had a big part of that. Big part of it.
Well, we talked about this on Soccer Down Here today, and Joe Patrick's in the building in the back. We were trying to come up with the comparison for what this could be like, and Eric Schwartz, who listens to all of the Atlanta United content out there, had a great question about it, and he compared it to Super Bowl III, that it was kind of that transcendent moment where the event grew up. That's a great one. There's not a World Series, I think, like that. I don't know the Stanley Cup well enough. NBA Finals, to me, I think we're going to look back at it like the 1984 NBA Finals.
The first one
was Lakers-Celtics, Bird Magic, where at the time it might not have been completely regarded as that game changer, but that one absolutely was.
You're spot on, because up until that point, the NBA Finals were not shown live on network television. Seriously.
Yep.
And, you know, 1 point, I think, 7 million viewers nationally, 300,000 in Atlanta alone.
Yeah.
I mean, Atlanta's TV rating was bonkers for the MLS Cup final. Great job, all of you.
What's crazy about that is you would expect, and I think in other MLS cities, the visiting team's TV rating would have been better than the home team's.
Sometimes, yeah.
Typically in MLS, because I think this fan base is so much bigger than who is in the building.
To that point, did you notice who else was in the top 10 markets?
There were a few surprises.
Greensboro, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Raleigh. There was another southern market that escapes me right now. West Palm Beach, but that's Florida. That's not the South.
South of Ocala. Doesn't work.
But no, there were a couple, I think Birmingham, Alabama may have been in there. Like a couple southern markets. That's a great sign. And I think this is a big next step for this club, is to make this more of a regional club instead of just an Atlanta thing. And that's something that's going to take some time.
Yeah.
But, boy, I would love to see it next year if we're in MLS Cup final again, where they're talking about it a lot in Macon. They're talking a lot about it in Augusta. And I saw the Greenville, South Carolina watch party. I thought that was awesome. Yeah. That looked great. But we need more of that, and more of that in the state of Georgia.
Our buddy Sean asks, when will Joseph and Tata get statues?
Well, Joseph said he was going to ride the Falcon statue, right? Just put him on top of
it. Joseph needs a statue at this point, the way he's had this season. Yeah. Unbelievable year all the way around. And I think one of the things that surprised me the most in the broadcast was the stat about how few players have had a goal and an assist in a cup final. There had only been two other ones who had done that.
Right.
And on top of the year he had to show up that big in that moment.
Well, in all the moments, All-Star Game MVP, regular season MVP, Golden Boot, MLS Cup Final MVP, our buddy Johannes doing the Lord's work. I mean, no one's ever done that before.
Nope.
No one's ever done it before. And I heard Alexi Lawless with Dukes and Bell as I was sitting in traffic trying to get in here. He said, Almiron was the best player in MLS this year. Joseph was the best goal scorer. But I think Joseph did a lot of things that if you don't watch Atlanta United like we do, I mean, we called every kick this year. Joseph does a lot of things that don't really get noticed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, creeping back into the midfield, doing some work defensively.
Set pieces. I mean, how many on the corners.
How many times has Joseph Martinez knocked down a corner kick that for whatever reason was played to the front post? Every single time, Joseph's going to knock it down.
About Tata, one real quick. I think in time we will look back at the Tata Martino hiring as one of those Mount Rushmore kind of moments for this league. You know, I think the move of moving on from Doug Logan, who was the first commissioner of the league, and hiring Don Garber took this league to a whole other level that it would not have found otherwise. I think bringing in David Beckham when they did changed what Major League Soccer was forever. And I think the hiring of Tata Martino will have that same effect on the coaching side and change Major League Soccer from a coaching perspective forever.
All right, time for one more question on Facebook, and then we're going to turn it over to the room. Did Carlton come tonight, by the way, the ATLian? No? He's sleeping off his parade hangover, I guess. Okay.
Let's see. We'll do this. Howard Hamilton says, was Joseph's 2018 the best individual season in MLS history?
It's got to be. I mean, I think you could look at a few guys who had a combination of goals and assists, but just sheer impact and I think the awards and the fact that he came up big in the final. You know, how many times do we see a player have an outstanding year, but in that Super Bowl or that World Series or whatever, they're kind of there and somebody else is the big surprise. Joseph was big throughout. I mean, he scored in 14 of 15 matches in the middle of the year. He had a goal and assist in the final. He was, you know, borderline unplayable at times for teams. I can't think of anybody to even compare it to.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's the mic drop, I guess. Thank you for all your questions on Facebook. Thank you for joining us all year. This is the Last Stoppage Time Live of 2018. The fortunate thing is this is going to be a very short off season. So in three weeks, I think, we're back with another show. We're going to get through the holidays and everything, and then get into free agency, training camp, CONCACAF Champions League preseason, and the regular season won't be long. I think we'll probably end up seeing a schedule pretty soon.
Yep.
Board of Governors will vote on the new schedule format, which I hate, this week. It's going to be approved. I am gravely concerned about it. As a CONCACAF Champions League club, all the midweek matches, U.S. Open Cup, CONCACAF, I am very concerned about it. And then going into straight knockout play in the play, I think it's a huge step back. But they don't listen to me. So hopefully we'll get the schedule pretty soon. And then we'll have Stoppage Time Live in 2019. We're going to turn things over now to the room here at Fidel. Thank you for watching on Facebook Live. And a big shout-out to Mena Diaz, our producer, all season long. Great job, Mena. Good night, Facebook people.